Hello everyone, welcome to Star Screams Ghost, a Transformers podcast, your episode-by-episode podcast guide through the classic Transformers Generation 1 cartoon, the classic, at this point I'm going to say, Andy, Headmasters cartoon from Japan, and now the Energon Universe comic continuity. I am Jeremy Graves, and I've mentioned him already, but of course my good friend in crime, Mr. Andy Hanley, joins me as we do a little bit of a different podcast when it comes to what we are going to be discussing. Before we go any further though, Andy, how are you doing, and are you excited to kind of change things up a little bit for this podcast?
Yes, a little bit, but not entirely, because there's definitely Transformers discussion to be had still. But yes, I'm back from the void, I guess.
but you're not my rival.
But I'm not yet. Who knows what this episode?
Oh, okay. Well,
upping the stakes.
So yeah, let's just cut to the chase, folks. Today, we'll be doing housekeeping a little bit later, by the way, at the end of the show. If you want to find chapter points for the podcast, be sure to check out the podcast description. You'll find time codes there. What we're going to do today, everybody, is we're going to delve in specifically into issues 2-6 of Void Rivals. This is part of the Energon comic continuity that the new Transformers universe was stealth-launched in, as we talked about a few podcasts ago. We're not going to be going massively in-depth into each issue. This is not a recap of each one. The way we're going to do this is we're actually going to first of all talk about the direct Transformers references, appearances of things, and bits and bobs like that. We're going to begin with that because fundamentally this is a Transformers-themed podcast and such. But as we kind of alluded to at the end of our last podcast, Void Rivals is a really good read, quite frankly. So we do want to touch on our experience of reading it, things we're liking and whatnot. So we will then discuss kind of very broadly, I imagine, how Void Rivals 2-6 has been for each of us, as it were, things we really, really liked and whatnot. And from there, we will wrap up accordingly and have the housekeeping and tell you what you can expect next from the podcast. So, Andy, anything else we should note before we get into the nitty-gritty of things today?
No, I think we can get cracking.
So, let's begin with direct Transformers references in Void Rivals. Now, this first one is kind of spread across both issues 2 and 3, because the actual issue 2 reference doesn't come until the very end of the comic. This is when our two intrepid travellers at this point are trying to fly away aboard their junk ship, as it were, back to their respective homes, and they are met by a giant meteor asteroid-like ship with claws. And inside, the final panel of the comic reveals that they have been captured by a Skuxoid, a notorious character in the context of Transformers cartoons, and I assume comics as well, Andy. I'm not too familiar with the comic background of the Skuxoid.
Yeah, I think that's like a cartoon. Certainly for like the original Marvel run, I don't think he turns up in the comics at all. I think he was an original for the cartoon. But yeah, and as a result, very much not a character I was expecting to turn up out of the blue in this series. So I laughed, I cheered, I had many emotions when it's suddenly like, hi, I'm the Skuxoid, basically. Like, oh, okay, I was not ready for this.
Yeah, it's a fun little panel as well, because the exact line of dialogue is, now surrender, you and all you possess is claimed by Skuxoid.
Yeah, and the nice thing about this is, like, to kind of spoilers for the, like, you know, forthcoming issues, like, he's not just there as a throwaway, kind of there for two panels and then, like, you know, it is like the classic, you do a reference, the audience cheers, and then you move on. Like, he's kind of actually an important part of the forthcoming issues of this, which is kind of cool, and actually fits pretty well into the universe and what's going on here, so I do like it.
Indeed, and Darak and Salila, the two protagonists of Void Rivals, very much caught off guard by what even the heck a Skuxoid is, as it were. Which then plays into how things progress in issue 3 of Void Rivals, because as they're kind of trying to escape the Skuxoid on board its ship and whatnot, they go sort of into the bowels, if you will, of the ship, and they encounter a few sort of doorways, locked doors, if you will. At one point, they are fighting a sort of scorpion robot type thing, which I'm going to say from the outset, immediately you're thinking, Transformers are involved in this universe? Is this meant to be Scorponok? It has been confirmed in one of the letters pages of the Transformers comic that no, that was not Scorponok. And apparently, Andy, he outright said, he says something to the effect of, if I'm going to do Scorponok, it will be purple and green and you'll know it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I wonder whether this was a slightly teasing, like, I'm going to make a thing that everyone's going to be like, I had the Transformer, and he'd be like, no, it's not. Or whether it's just like, I suspect it's probably more along the lines of, like, scorpions are kind of cool and, like, robot scorpions are also cool, so sure, why not?
The perhaps more interesting cameo, well, and what it ends up kind of being a bit of a cameo, but it, again, there are through lines continuing here in this universe. We then get a Quintesson Andy. More specifically, if I remember correctly, it's the Quintesson Judge, the one who's kind of got more like an alligatory looking head, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember like how they're referred to, because yeah, like Quintesson's apparently very much part of this universe, and yeah, like our first experience, like yeah, I can't remember whether he's a judge or what his like official designation is, but sure is a Quintesson, that's for sure.
Yeah, in looking at a TF Wiki page, they just identify it simply as a Quintesson, so we'll go with that for now, but. But yeah, the one with kind of the long head, if you will. Yeah, the one that reminds you of like an alien.
Yeah, and again, interesting because our main characters, again, are just like, we, who are you? Like, there are no matches in our database to you, which sort of adds to the mystery of a lot of things, of kind of, you know, the, like the races slash race involved in Void Rivals directly, and
the whole Sacred Ring and whatnot.
Yeah, like, you know, where the Quintessons, etc., you know, fit into this, because again, depending on your history with Transformers, whether it's cartoon or comics, like some wildly different ideas about who the Quintessons are and what their kind of place in the Transformers universe is. So interesting to see them turning up here. They seem to have a stake in some of what's going on here, so like this was definitely another sit up and like, oh okay, this is important kind of moment.
Yeah, and to elaborate on that specifically, per the TF Wiki and their synopsis of the comic, the Quintesson explains that while he didn't board the ship as a prisoner, this being the Skuxoid ship, his kind had made many enemies over the centuries, and that he will be in their debt, that being Darak and Salila, if they help him escape. The Quintesson then leads the pair to his ship, which is that very familiar kind of multi-layered sort of dome looking thing, Andy, that we've seen in the cartoon before of Transformers.
Yes, yeah, it's the cool spiral ship thing.
Thank you, that's the word I was thinking of. There you go. But the Skuxoid is already there and is waiting for them. Skuxoid tells them not to trust the Quintesson, since he'll just betray them the first chance he gets. While Darak and Salila are hesitant to take his word, Skuxoid informs the rivals that he only hurts people if he's paid. Since he wasn't able to find a single bounty for them in any system, which is an interesting point we may come back to you later, Andy, but it's like on both sides, the Sacred Ring people are not in anyone's systems,
yeah.
But then the Quintessons aren't in the Sacred Rings database either. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an interesting point, that.
Yeah.
But while they're not in any of their systems, he offers them a deal instead, trading their junk ship that I alluded to earlier and its unique alloy for an old Nebulan transport. And the pair accept and leave the Skuxoid, much to the Quintessons, excuse me, chagrin. He's very much not happy about this. In fact, the exact line of dialogue the Quintesson has is, "This is an outrage. You're not actually going to make a deal with him, are you?"
Yeah, I mean, again, one of my favourite kind of like sentences that anybody can say, "This is an outrage."
There you go.
I do enjoy that.
But some more direct references now, per the TF Wiki and some continuity notes, which are worth bringing up. From a continuity note point of view, the Quintesson drops some exposition alluding to the as-yet-unseen history of the Energon universe, specifically mentioning the Age of Wrath. Specifically mentioning the Age of Wrath. Now, whether this is a Cybertron-centric event or more a galaxy-spanning event remains to be discovered. In terms of direct Transformers references, in case you're curious, the Skuxoid grouses that he's just trying to support his wife and kids, which was a recurring motivation for the character in his appearances in the Generation 1 cartoon, featured in the episodes Starscream's Ghost and Grimlock's New Brain. Mm-hmm, he also mentions his friendship with Slizardo and uses the phrase "cross my heart and hope to die," but both also lifted from the latter episode.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed how deep they went in on that. Again, not just a quick kind of character cameo of just like, hey, look, it's this guy. Like, yeah, it's all of the things you know and love about the Skuxoid all in this one comic.
Oh, in fact, we were just mentioning it a minute ago. I can actually clarify it now. While only referred to as a Quintesson, Skuxoid's captive is specifically a Quintesson prosecutor.
That's the one, prosecutor, yes.
There you go. Both he and his Quintesson cruiser first appeared in Transformers the movie.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
The Age of Wrath that the Quintesson mentions is an element of this aligned continuity family, itself taking its name from an eponymous comic book series published by Dreamwave Productions.
Okay, that's, yeah, because that felt like I've heard that before but know nothing about it, so that makes sense.
It is specifically Transformers War Within the Age of Wrath.
Okay, yeah, because, yeah, I've read some of War Within, but I don't think I've gotten that deep into it, so that'll be why.
Which was circa 2004 it was released.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Nebulan ship is mentioned as being pre-Hive, referencing Lord Zarak's despotic group from the Generation 1 cartoon's fourth season arc, The Rebirth. They're really getting into, like, the weeds on stuff here, Andy, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, there's a real kind of, like, love letter to the cartoons in this kind of, in this story particularly.
So we move into issue 4 of Void Rivals, and there's various things going on from a story perspective, quite a unique sort of advancement of the story in terms of where the characters are at, which we may come back to in more detail later. But then suddenly, Andy, we turn the page, we get a full page panel of Shockwave,
mm-hmm.
who just says, "What is the meaning of this outrage?"
Yeah, there's two outrages in one go.
He then goes on to say, "You dare bring a Quintesson to Cybertron?" So we get our first, well, I say our first look at Cybertron. We get to kind of see like the floor and a few buildings in the background. But one thing is that it's now established, Andy, Cybertron exists. This is a crucial detail that we need to know. Yeah. And what's the Skuxoid trying to do is trying to sell Shockwave the Quintesson.
which does not go down well, as we can tell. Which, again, this is like really interesting as in terms of what is this kind of sticking to like the cartoon continuity of like Quintesson's kind of created Cybertron and we're constantly messing with it in the later seasons. Because, yeah, there's definitely like there's a literally just like, oh, like Shockwave hates the Quintessons, and it's kind of inferred that that is a general, like everybody on Cybertron hates the Quintessons, like why would you sell me this like foul creature, he calls it. So yeah, that's really interesting in terms of setting up that particular part of the universe, because it says a lot but also doesn't necessarily. So I'm interested to see that fleshed out, and I'm sure it will be at some point.
I mean, for one thing, it shows that, at the very least, the Decepticons on Cybertron, whoever is left, are aware that the Quintessons are even a thing.
Yeah. And this also sets the tone for, like, the classic kind of, what does Cybertron look like after Megatron, etc. go off on the Ark? It's like, well, Shockwave is clearly Decepticon commander here, and, you know, doing his thing. So, yeah, that sort of gives you a little bit of flavour for what Cybertron looks like currently.
And to elaborate a little bit on what is said per the TF Wiki, Shockwave, however, is outraged at his presence and says that even if he wanted a Quintesson prisoner, he has no currency with which to pay. He barely has enough energon for himself, and his fellow Decepticons are all currently in stasis. The Skuxoid tries to barter some sort of trade, but Shockwave simply tells him to leave before he strips his Rockeroid for parts. Now, that line about all the Decepticons being in stasis, that is very curious.
Yeah, because that is certainly a divergence from sort of your typical, you know, what you see in the cartoon and the comics, where, you know, the war is still just raging on. And yeah, like, Energon is at a premium, but it's not quite those dire straits. And again, that also leads to other questions, like, what about the remaining Autobots on Cybertron, of which there must be some? Like, you know, are they also in stasis? Is it really just Shockwave kind of rocking around in like energy saving mode? Like what's going on here? So some very interesting stuff to ponder.
So to kind of delve in a little bit more into this specific thing, per the TF Wiki, for the Transformers references section of Void Rivals issue 4. Sorry, I lost track of my numbers there. Hey kids, it's Shockwave. The Cyclopean Decepticon makes his debut as the second appearance by a Transformer in the Energon universe. In terms of publishing times, that's how this worked out, folks. Keep that in mind. Like Jetfire before him, Shockwave appears to be fulfilling a similar role to his Generation 1 cartoon counterpart, standing watch as a lone sentinel of Cybertron. In his exchange with the Skuxoid, Shockwave notes that his fellow Decepticons are all in stasis and alludes to a paucity of Energon. A state of affairs similar to the Great Shutdown in the Dreamwave Productions Generation 1 comic. So lots of things potentially being teased here, and which fair play to the TF Wiki for managing to put two and two together on what potentially some of these may be. We then advance to Void Rivals 5. Now, when it comes to this, Andy, it's actually fairly early on in the issue because we literally get to see now the actual Quintessons. Mm-hmm. Just full-blown with their various faces, looking maniacal as ever. And, of course, how have we come to see them? It's because the Skuxoid has brought the prosecutor back to them.
Yeah, just your galactic door-to-door salesman. The Skuxoid's going around knocking everyone's door. Like, do you want this Quintesson? Like, I don't know. Will someone please just buy the Quintesson?
To read the TF Wiki recap of the Void Rivals issue 5 synopsis. Meanwhile, unable to make a profit off the Quintesson prosecutor, Skuxoid has opted to sell him back to the Quintesson judge on Quintessa. The judge is less than happy to be extorted in such a manner and threatens to feed Skuxoid to the Sharktacons. But Skuxoid reassures them that he doesn't want to damage their existing financial relationship. The judge then asks what happened to the Quintesson Scorpia the prosecutor had been transporting, that being the scorpion robot monster thing I mentioned, prompting the prosecutor to reveal it was destroyed aboard the Rockeroid. The judge then orders the prosecutor to be taken away in disgrace and that Skuxoid be prepared for trial. As a group of Alicons converge on him, Skuxoid pleads with the judge, offering to give them all his ships, including one made of rare Agorian and Zetonian metals, the two corresponding places that the Sacred Ring are in Void Rivals. The judge orders the Alicons to stop, the mention of Zetonia getting their attention. Which again adds that little bit of extra flavour, a little bit of extra sauce, Andy, into all the Quintessons, as you would expect, no stuff.
And the particular interest in like Zetonian as a thing of just like, okay, well this is, again, this is not a throwaway reference either. This is clearly going to play into some of the grander schemes at hand in this series. So it's all slowly kind of little pieces fitting together on the board.
Mm. In terms of the Transformers reference references directly, a lot of the stuff that we saw in this comic are actually originate from Transformers the movie, such as the Quintesson Judge and the Alicons, originally from the Transformers movie, which is great to see. Here's a little interesting tidbit for you, Andy, which I did not notice, so this is quite fascinating in some ways. The Quintesson Judge mentions the planet Dominus, Hasbro's English name for Planet Master from the Japanese sequel, The Headmasters.
Oh, okay. So we are partly in the Headmasters universe as well. Cool.
How's that for a blooming callback right there?
Yeah, I was not ready for that one.
Then we go to issue 6. And of course now, the through line is the Skuxoid. So what is the Skuxoid doing, everybody? Simply put, is trying to sell various things. But more specifically now, we're looking at the ship that Darak and Salila were travelling on that they had traded in order to be able to get back to their own respective home planets. Per the TF Wiki's recap of the issue. Meanwhile, on Quintessa, Skuxoid presents the Quintesson Judge with Darak and Salila's patchwork ship, slinking off while the judge examines the craft. The judge is fascinated by it, muttering something to themselves about her, in air quotes, succeeding eons ago. They order an executioner to have the ship transported to their laboratory and scanned for anything that could lead them to Zetonia. So already, Andy, we're getting little mentions of things here. In the continuity notes section, the TF Wiki saying, the Quintesson's allusion to her and fixation on Zetonia likely indicates some connection between them and Zerta, the deities of the Zetonians first... first referenced in issue 2 of Void Rivals.
Yeah, and it suggests that there's some very deep history there. Again, talk of a rebellious child, and it's something that's kind of plagued the Quintessons for a while. So it's setting up a lot of potentially juicy stuff here without giving us any real context for what the juiciness is. But it certainly sounds intriguing. Revelations that would shock our civilization to its core. Mm. There's clearly something big here, and just the idea that they're shocked that Zetonia might be real, really kind of gives a lot of flavor as to exactly what is going on here, and that it's going to be pretty seismic by the sound of it, whatever it is, and that the Quintessons are maybe going to turn out to be a pretty big, maybe a third party in everything that's going on in this series, but maybe they're actually more directly related to some of this than we know. So very interesting stuff.
Yeah, and the rebellious child note that you mentioned, the TF Wiki themselves actually note that this is alluding to their usual role of creators for the Transformers before being overthrown by their creations. Which, even adding to the Shockwave note that we mentioned a few minutes ago, that adds sort of further credence that the Transformers are aware of the Quintessons in this continuity.
There's clearly some kind of symbiotic link between the two as well. So, as the Quintessons also say, there is much to consider.
Indeed. And so, folks, that, in terms of the direct Transformers references, that is what has come up thus far within issues 2-6 of Void Rivals. I will say, Andy, and we'll get on to talking about Void Rivals in general in a few moments, but I love what they have done with just kind of drip feeding in little bits of Transformers related things, and how it doesn't feel out of place either. Some could argue it feels a bit shoehorned, but all of it's got a through line, and it's, of all things, from the Skuxoid, that's the through line.
That's the thing, because I did think that was going to be quite a throwaway cameo, but it actually makes so much sense as to have, basically intergalactic salesman / tradesman, because, of course, if you're looking for one character that's going to visit pretty much every player in this game, and try to flog him something, it's he's perfect for that role, because nobody else would. Unless you're doing a lot of cutaways to various different planets and trying to set it all up that way, it's difficult to make a play for it. But this works really well as just the connective tissue of okay, this is joining all the dots for the reader in a way that's really good. The interesting thing is this all feels way more important to the universe than I thought it maybe would. I was expecting it to be a lot of kind of frivolous little cameos here and there, but it feels like there's a lot of kind of really important sort of deep history that's gonna end up being dragged out in the wash with the stuff going on in this series. And that, I feel like it would be, it's been a pretty compelling series without that, but as somebody who's interested in the Transformers universe and what they're doing here, it kind of turns it in from a oh, this is kind of nice to read, into a sort of, this feels like you have to read it if you really want to go deep on what's going on in this particular iteration of the Transformers universe.
It's really cool to see. And talking about deep history and sort of where things are going and whatnot when it comes to this specific comic, let's talk about issue 2-6 of Void Rivals, and in essence probably more of issue 1 as well, realistically, because we never delved into that issue proper. But I will just say, first of all, Andy, I have loved reading these issues of this comic. I think it has been building the world fantastically, Transformers stuff aside, because that's just part and parcel of it. But I love the way they're building this and slowly adding in more details and showing off more elements of things. And the journey that Darak and Salila have gone on to where we get to come the end of issue 6, it's such a wonderful journey, and the relationships between the two of them, the sort of hidden betrayals going on, and the little drip feeds again of just information and concepts of things. I think this world is building fantastically, and Robert Kirkman at the helm is doing a brilliant job with this.
Yeah, yeah, I'm certainly enjoying it a lot. Like, the two sort of main characters, like you say, they're a really good sort of double act, you know, with their own sort of like various outlooks. There's been so much like crossing and double crossing that, you know, I think my eyes are crossed trying to like unpack them all sometimes, because it's like, who's on whose side here? I don't like, do you guys like each other or not? Like, just come on, get to it. And yeah, like, all of that stuff has been really good and enjoyable. But also it works really well when those characters are separated from each other and when they're doing their own individual thing. Because sometimes it's easy to write like a double act of two characters that bounce off of one another. And then when they're not in the same room, they're both like annoying or boring or whatever. But I actually like they both work well with their own agency doing their own things when they're not in the same location at the same time. So that's really worked. I think the characters are a big part of what's kind of kept me going with this, you know, of just like, oh, I like spending time with these individuals, and that by proxy kind of, you know, keeps up my interest in, you know, the story as a whole. I think the other thing these issues have done really well thus far is like pacing wise.
Yes.
Like, issue 6 is maybe the first time that I feel like I just kind of want to nudge the accelerator for them and like, come on, let's really start let's start booking it, let's floor it for a bit. But generally speaking, like, it's good at knowing when to kind of accelerate and when to just ease off and kind of let things percolate for a little bit. And I think it's done a really good job of doing that. And yeah, like you say, the way it drip feeds stuff in, it always, every time you feel like you know everything or you know enough to be getting on, there's something else. There's a little sidebar that kind of brings something into question or brings a little bit of extra clarity or focus to something. And that just kind of always keeps you on your toes and kind of interested for where it's going next. Because this is not a series where you can feel comfortable of just like, okay, I know the direction of travel of this, because there are so many sort of moving parts. And again, like, it's where like the Quintesson stuff really kind of feeds into that as well, of just like everything that has happened thus far can just be upended just like that by somebody changing allegiances or somebody dropping a piece of information that we don't have or another party getting involved. And yeah, I'm sort of quite keen for the point where more of that is going to come to a head, because there's got to be a point where a lot of this converges and all hell breaks loose. And I'm here for it.
Yeah, it's like, even from, we began with two rival nations effectively, and these two people being against each other, to then finding out, oh, why do we like appear so similar?
Yeah, and why are we two nations at all?
Exactly. And then like the whole sacred ring thing, and the back politics that we get little glimpses of, and the fact that they seemingly all used to be one, now they're not, but it's all manufactured to be that way.
Yeah, and even within each of those factions, there are other splits within that faction. Like, there's clearly people, like, you know, working behind the scenes to undermine those factions or to, you know, prop them up. And there's a lot going on. And again, there's not really, you know, there's no clear kind of good or evil here either. Like, there's nobody here that's just a like, okay, yeah, this is who you should be rooting for. It's like, it's all kind of a bit of a mess. It's like, maybe the Skurksoid is the only good guy here, as it turns out. Who knows?
Yeah, it's like, as well, in terms of sort of other things that have been drip-fed in, I think one of my favourite character appearances, and we don't know anything about them, but it all relates... A lot of the mysterious nature of this comic at the moment, to me, is Celila. Because the way that... But in case you've not figured it out, by the way, spoilers to those listening and watching. But in terms of Celila's direction, they were the most kind of at odds with wanting to work with Darak. Then they seemingly opened up a bit, but then that turned out just to be a way just to get back. But then her getting back was actually bad for her because it meant she had failed. And it's like all the various different permutations. But what I really, really liked was when Celila is in jail, and I think this is in issue 5, I might have to look up as we're talking, She's kind of sitting in the holding cell after she's been thrown in there because, you know, she knows things effectively is going to be off. And then suddenly we get three characters walking in who we're told, based on dialogue, are from the keeper, from the Keepers of the Light. And it's a character by the name of Mistress Vill. And it's just like a black and purple outfit. Kind of almost looks like a nun type character from the way they're dressed. And it's just a fascinating character design. And I want to know so much more because it added extra layers of detail to Celila's character in terms of like, we know you can take care of yourselves. Oh, sorry, the Caverns of the Rawl. I'm just scrolling through the comic actually on my Kindle. I was going through it. They're from the Caverns of Rawl. And it's just, there's so much more to this Celila character. Even in issue 6 that you were mentioning, someone alludes to the fact, I've known Celila for 5 years. I ain't trusted her.
Yeah.
There is a much deeper, darker element to Celila we do not know yet. Whereas Darak is basically the equivalent of Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy. Just like a hotshot pilot who somehow makes everything work. And is kind of just and is a disappointment to their father, kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's kind of that I think is why that dynamic between those two characters works so well. But yeah, like Celila in particular is just like such an enigma. Like it almost feels like even they don't really know what their allegiances are anymore because they've just spent so much time just kind of like double crossing everybody just to like do what they think they need to do, that it's just like, yeah, like I'm not really sure where they fit on the scale because it's just, you know, it all feels like a bit of a mess. But yeah, like all these characters who clearly have expectations of Celila that, you know, she has or hasn't met, and it's like, yeah, there's just so many moving parts that I do feel like at some point, you know, maybe before the next issue comes out, I just kind of want to reread it in one hit now there are like 6 issues out, because I feel like I sort of need to dig back into it and really kind of get into the nitty-gritty of some of it, because there's a lot of layers to this.
And worth mentioning as well, if folks out there listening to this are waiting for sort of like a collected version of it, the actual first trade paperback collecting the first 6 issues has apparently been announced for release in late February.
Okay, so a little while to wait, but
yeah, so there will probably be by that point 2 or 3 issues difference, which is a fair release schedule. You can kind of gather from that how they'll be doing it. But yeah, I can't wait for more of this. And the way it's kind of left on issue 6, like you said, the pacing of issue 6, out of all of them, that's the one that kind of had to slow down a bit to kind of set up what seemingly is coming next.
Yeah.
So you kind of get it to a point, but yeah, overall, I have loved reading this comic, which has been a wonderful surprise just from the way it ended up, you know, stealth launching the Transformers stuff, and now it's really become its own thing. This is definitely a comic now I'm probably just going to be picking up day one each time and just reading, because I'm so excited for it.
Yeah. Like, I kind of, like, read, like, a few issues sort of in bulk, having sort of, like, been too busy, frankly, to read issues for a while, but it was really nice to kind of get back to it. And yeah, like, I hope it's doing well for them, because obviously this feels like the one that is most of a kind of stretch in terms of getting people on board, because obviously, like, the Transformers and G.I. Joe stuff, you kind of know who you're selling that to. Like, this is the one where it's like, can you sell people on this? Because it's not enough Transformers to just be like, hey, if you like Transformers, read this. But you know, it has to stand alone in its own right, and I feel like thus far it is doing it, but hopefully that is translating into people actually buying and reading this thing.
I'm just having a quick glance, like I can see listings for a fourth printing of issue 1 alone.
Okay, so that seems like, I mean, yeah, it's a question of like whether people get beyond, I guess, into the further issues, but that's definitely a strong start at least.
Yeah, let me see if I can do a quick little hit on there are more printings. Void Rivals 2, it's in its fourth printing at least.
Okay.
Yeah, of which it's very amusing actually. Looking at Void Rivals 5, which is also in the second printing, they've now got variant covers of each of the Quintessons' faces.
Right, of course. I mean, the joy of the Quintessons, I guess. You've always got a lot of variants.
Yeah, so there we go. So people clearly are sticking on board with it though, if it's getting to at least a second print run. Which also may imply, though, that the initial print run of each issue now is larger.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to imagine that they're kind of changing that on the fly as they go, based on demand.
But from there, folks, you're probably wondering what is going to be happening next time. It's something that we've sort of mentioned in passing a few times. We're going to sort of get back to the cartoon side of things. And we've talked about it, Andy. And what we're going to do next time, we're going to do a taster of the next series in the Japanese continuity of Transformers, Super God Master Force. Now, we don't know what to expect with this show, other than the fact it's very different. And what we'll do is we could do, Andy, the first two, maybe three episodes, depending how things go?
Yeah. I think we maybe, we'll see how, like, the episodes kind of lay out, but maybe the first couple. But yeah, like, I don't know how episodic and how, like, big, you know, whether it's going to be big chunks of storyline. So we'll see. We'll wing it a little bit and see how it goes. Maybe we'll watch, like, 5 minutes and be like, we can't take this anymore. Don't make us watch it. Who can say? Maybe we'll watch it all in an afternoon and just be like, on this podcast, just like wired on, just like, we've just watched 20 hours of Super God Master Force in one go. Ask us anything. So I don't know. We'll see. I don't think that'll happen, but it might happen. Like, it's, you know, we're recording this just before Christmas. Anything is possible in this time of year.
Exactly. So either way, we'll delve into at least a couple episodes. We'll give some background information on the series as well, so we kind of can give you a little bit of a primer before we delve into it. And kind of following on with our new recap format, we'll kind of mainly go with the synopsis from the TF Wiki, and we'll kind of pepper in our thoughts as we go along as well. If you want to join us in watching it, folks, I admittedly own the DVD set, but you can find the series readily on YouTube, and I think we're basically going to be going with a YouTube version primarily as our source to be able to watch those episodes with. So do feel free to join us in watching those first couple episodes if you would like to do so. And of course, if you have enjoyed this show, heck, if you're a first-time listener, thank you very much for giving us a chance on an episode kind of very deep cutty like this. Thank you very much. You can find our podcast feeds, our links to our YouTube channel, links to our social media, all at our website, starscreamspod.com. That is the place to go to find, like I say, every link that you need to find our podcast and all prior episodes. Andy, before we wrap up for today, anything else you would like to impart on our wonderful listeners?
No, I just want to say thank you for listening to this and deciding not to avoid this podcast. Which I can hear people hitting the unsubscribe button as I say that. It's like, I gave and you I can't, a chance.
And I can't follow that, so, you know.
Gave you a chance and you blew it.
There you go. With that being said, folks, thank you very much for listening and or watching once again. From myself, Jeremy Graves, from him, Mr. Andy Hanley. Until next time, take care, speak to you soon, and squish!
Bye, everyone.